Good morning, Matt.
Welcome to the DMZ, everyone.
Now, you were on MSNBC a couple weeks ago on Steve Kornacki's Up with Steve Kornacki.
Yeah.
And it was and you had a very ferocious appearance talking about this whole issue of the religious freedom law that had passed in had it passed Indiana yet, or was this in the works?
This was in the works. I think the hook was that Jeb Bush had something about Jeb Bush had sort of weighed in as supporting it verbally, something like that. I think that was the hook.
And so you were out there making the case that that we shouldn't be encroaching too far into people's religious liberties. You were a lone voice on it was a four against one kind of deal on MSNBC. But now the issue has really blown up after the bill got signed in Indiana, and now Governor Pence is backtracking from it. And I can just see on your Twitter feed that there is, I mean, Pence is sort of a golden boy among social conservatives, and now that seems to be kind of now he seems to be kind of scuffed up. What do you make of what this means for the viability of social conservatives in the Republican Party?
Well, I had a lot to digest there. I mean, first, yeah, you're right. When I was on that episode of Up, I had no idea this issue was going to blow up to the degree that it did. I mean, it's always a contentious issue, but I thought it was just going to sort of be like a subplot, you know, not the dominant story that it has been. So I was surprised by that. I know that Mike Pence was surprised by that. I think he's getting beat up by the left and the right. The left, for obvious reasons, they don't like the bill. From the right, I think it's for the fact that he's been a bad communicator, which is interesting. He's thought of as a good communicator, I think, but maybe there's a time for sort of affable, likable, cheerful warriors, and maybe there's a time for wartime consiglieres, and maybe the culture wars are that time. I think that Chris Christie or Scott Walker might be better suited temperamentally to fight these kind of fights, whereas Pence might be better suited for other things. In fact, I'm sure he is. This is a lesson that not everybody is good at everything. I think the message it sends, though, is I think it's a chastening message for social conservatives, and I think that a lot of religious folks feel under attack now, maybe more than they have in a long time, and I think it sends messages about the business community that doesn't like this kind of thing, normally have been allies of the Republicans. There's sort of a cleavage between the SOCONs and the business community. So a lot of different things happening here, Bill.
I'm sorry for losing my train of thought. I want to preface this by saying I think we've talked about this issue in the past. I think we talked about it back in the Hobby Lobby days.
Oh yeah, I'm sure.
And I always find your particular role in the conservative movement on this issue, I would think is fairly unique. Maybe you disagree, or I'm being prejudiced here. But you have been a voice for inclusion of gays in the conservative movement. You're also a very adamant voice about protecting what social conservatives see as a religious liberty issue. If I own a bakery, I should not be forced to serve a wedding cake at a gay wedding. You've taken that
right
stance, but you're not someone who otherwise is trying to drum gays out of the Republican Party of the conservative movement. Is this an uncomfortable spot for you to be in? Do you find yourself not enjoying this debate because you're kind of in this sort of awkward spot?
Well, first of all, thank you for saying that. And I don't think I'm that unique, though. I think that there are a lot, at least in terms of sort of conservative writers that I know, and folks, you know, who sort of center-right journalists. I think that there are a lot of folks who sort of share that philosophy that I've had. Now, maybe that's not the case around the country, I don't know, but I don't think I'm that unique in terms of people who write about culture, you know, from a conservative perspective. But yeah, I think this is a difficult topic for me. I do not like it. You know, there's some things in politics that you kind of like, and you get a little jaded, and you enjoy the sort of the gamesmanship of it. I don't like this issue because I think that it's really, well, number one, the stakes are incredibly high. I think it's sort of a zero-sum game at this point. And I think just the notion, I guess I would say that I am deeply, deeply concerned about protecting religious liberty and religious dissent. And I do see it not only slipping away, but I see a world where people like me who don't really have a problem. I don't really care that much about, I don't obsess about, you know, the gay issue one way or the other, but like I'm not out protesting against gay marriage or anything like that. But just increasingly, where essentially at some point, if you defend religious liberty, then you are branded a bigot. And that, I think, number one, once you're branded a bigot, you are done. Number two, it's like really bad for political thought, for the exchange of ideas. So yeah, I find this issue to be really disheartening and not terribly happy about kind of the state of where we are today.
Well, I wrote last year in a political magazine how Republicans lost the culture war, and the hook of that piece was when the Supreme Court essentially allowed, you know, most of the states to go forward with equal marriage rights, and Republicans basically took a pass on the issue and didn't raise much of a fuss about it. A couple isolated examples otherwise. That was an act of surrender. You know, we, you know, at one point, Pat Buchanan was saying that, you know, fighting the homosexual agenda was a cornerstone of the culture war. And now Republicans, by and large, are saying, "Look, this is over. The public has weighed in on this, and we sort of see where the generational winds are shifting. We don't need to get in the way of that." But then here's a case where you have kind of like a last ditch move, and you again see this sort of overwhelming pressure, not just from the left, but from the business community, saying, look, if you do anything that is seen as discriminatory towards gays, you know, we're out. You are persona non grata to us. And, you know, that on the left is seen as a significant victory, that it is impossible to turn back the tide on the subject. And I guess where you're coming from is, and I don't want to put words in your mouth, that I mean, from what I heard on MSNBC, you don't want to see a slippery slope in where the government tells a church, you have to perform a same-sex marriage ceremony. And I guess where I'm coming from is I don't think you have to presume that slippery slope has to get there. I mean, we have a pretty hard firewall with separation of church and state. Even most of these religious freedom laws that we have, or should say other regulations that we have that kind of can encroach upon that, there usually is a line saying this doesn't apply to churches or religious-based nonprofits. Where we get into these stickier subjects is when you get into for-profit situations. That's the whole Hobby Lobby issue, and now this issue.
Well, first of all, I would say, I mean, first I would say that, you know, I don't think a business, and I don't think anyone credible thinks that a business should be able to discriminate against a gay person. However, being a part of a gay marriage ceremony is another thing. And, you know, if you're a photographer, sort of like a freelancer, shouldn't you be allowed to sort of pick and choose which clients you work for, and if you have deeply held religious beliefs that say that, gay marriage is wrong, should you be compelled by the state, forced to go to a gay marriage against your will, and work and serve as a photographer there? So now the interesting thing is, I don't think the RFRA law would protect that would protect that photographer. So in a way, we're fighting over something, not you and I, Bill, but that wouldn't even pr I'm saying that a religious liberty law should protect that photographer from having to work at a religious ceremony that they view to be, something that they don't believe in. But RFRA, as far as I know, would not actually protect that photographer anyway. So in a way, it's a moot point, but I think it's signaling is what it is, and
So
it's a
from
very
your
symbolic
understanding,
thing.
and I forgive me, I should have boned up a little bit before talking about it, but and I know there's been a degree of debate, what does the Indiana law actually do? We have a national Religious Freedom
Right.
Restoration Act law. That's 1993, as Republicans have been fond of saying, Democrats backed this at the time, it passed with wide bipartisan support. The classic example at the time was Native Americans using peyote in religious ceremonies. The drug law shouldn't have to apply to that. And that's the law that was in play in the Hobby Lobby case. And the Hobby Lobby ruling, and I know we talked about this before, but I find people still don't actually understand what that ruling said, what the conservative majority said on the Supreme Court. They said that law, because the National Religious Freedom Law says the government has a compelling interest to enforce anti-discrimination laws and other such matters, and they can infringe on your religious liberty if they have a compelling interest to do so, but they have to do it in the least burdensome way possible. So the Hobby Lobby ruling did not say, Hobby Lobby, you claim you're a Christian for-profit business, therefore you get to do whatever you want. It did not say that. It said,
Right.
if the government says we have a compelling interest to provide birth control access to everybody, that is a legitimate compelling interest. You just have to pursue it in the least burdensome way possible, and your initial foray in doing it was not the least burdensome. You have other ways to do it. So that's what
Yeah.
the
And
current
similarly, I
law
mean, it's
says.
and similarly, let's just say it real quick, and similarly, the Indiana law would not give anybody the right to discriminate. But what it would do, I think, is allow that decision to go before a judge who would then, on a case-by-case basis, weigh the merits. Are there alternative places that somebody could go to get the same service? Is this legitimate? Is this really somebody's deeply held belief? Whatever the criteria are. So when Mike Pence struggles to answer that question, it's partly the fact that he's not communicating well, but it's also a kind of a difficult question to answer, because in fact, it would kick it to a judge who would then make that determination.
Well,
Which is
if you
why I think,
have
which
the
is why I
national.
see RFRA, which is why I see RFRA sort of as a moderate compromise, to be honest with you. It's not, I don't see it as a radical thing at all, but it's clearly being portrayed as something that is radical.
Now, if you have the national law on the books, what is the need for a state law?
Well, apparently it doesn't. If something's under the jurisdiction of a state, it doesn't apply. That's why I guess what 19 states have the laws, and Indiana now does too. Bill, real quickly, I want to answer something you brought up the last question, and the
Okay.
last question that I didn't answer, which is the slippery slope argument. And I do believe that that the goalposts have continued to move. Right. So it used to be that you could say, like, hey, man, I don't have a problem with gay people. Do what you want. And you were a fine person. Like you weren't drummed out of polite society. Right. And then it could be that you were for civil unions, but not gay marriage. And that was fine. And then you had to be for gay marriage. And now, as I've been saying, bake me a cake, became or Leave Me Alone became Bake Me a Cake. There used to be this saying, if you don't like gay marriage, don't get gay married. Now it's, well, you have to sort of be a part of it too, right? So I do feel like culturally the goalposts have moved. And while I don't think that slippery slope arguments are always inevitable, the speed at which this is moving does strike me as, you know, I would not be surprised, and maybe I'm an alarmist, but if at some point chaplains in the military have to perform gay marriage, whether they believe in it or not, whether they like it or not, that church pastors, I mean, think of it, if you have a congregant who's been sitting in a pew for 20 years, who's, you know, paying tithes to your church, and if you tell them they can't marry the person that they love in your church, does that equal protection under the law? I mean, I can definitely see a situation where the state, at the very least, revokes their tax-exempt status for failing to do that. So I really do believe, you know, Eric Erickson says you will be made to care. It does seem like no matter how much, you know, you try to sort of be a conscientious objector in this culture war, it almost becomes impossible. And yeah, I would not be the least bit surprised. And then how does this affect, you know, people, what you teach your kids, what private Christian schools teach kids, what the curriculum is. You know, I mean, I had Michael Brendan Dougherty on my podcast yesterday. You can check that out. Who wrote a piece about this for The Week. And on the podcast, he brought up, what if you're teaching them that homosexuality is a sin, but they're say they're closeted, you know, you could be giving them all sorts of, you know, baggage and problems. And maybe the state should have something to say about that you're maybe not fit as a parent. I know at some point this sounds utterly paranoid, but I have to tell you, Bill, this is where a lot of Christians are today, is fearing what is the next sort of shoe to drop on this issue.
Michael, but these are issues that all parents have to deal with on a wide array of issues. You know, for example, my daughter is about to turn 6, so the next year she is, if she wants to play soccer, she has to be in a gender segregated soccer team. But last year it was co-ed soccer. Next year it can't be co-ed soccer. I am really not looking forward to having to explain why that is. And in fact, I don't believe it should be that way. I don't believe that we should have gender segregated teams. I think we should have rules that ensure that everyone can play together and that everyone will still get a fair shot kicking the ball. But I don't get to live in that world right now. I have to deal with the world as it is. And I don't want to, I have to choose how I'm going to explain this and not make her, you know, not impose all of my views on her life and make it impossible for her to function in her polite elementary school society if she wants to play soccer. I mean, so there's all sorts of stuff out there where you sit may not be in the mainstream of the rest of society, and we all have to navigate that kind of stuff. And as far as the law goes, I guess one of the things that trips me up is it's one thing to subscribe to a faith that says homosexuality is a sin, but there are all sorts of other things that are said as sin too. Does a photographer, not, you know, does a Mormon not want to do a photographer? A Mormon photographer doesn't want to go to a place where they serve alcohol, for example. Would the same issue arise with the same level of intensity if it was a sin like that?
Well, I just think,
Why?
look, I just think they should have the right to say, like, hey, man, you know, it's not my bag. You know, go, God bless you. Good luck to you. I don't like being around alcohol. It's against my beliefs, but let me recommend this other guy down the street. You know, like, I think he should just have a right to, like, not be a part of something that you find morally, you know, sort of morally wrong, and that the state shouldn't compel you to do it. Now, frankly, I'd bake the cake. I'd go drink the liquor. I mean, whatever. But to force people to violate their conscience. And I mean, Bill, I do think there's a slight difference. You're right. I mean, all of us, you and I, We have to do things that we don't want to do, and to be a part of society, we have to compromise and sort of go along with the program. But I do think there's a difference between like a personal preference and a deeply held religious conviction. And I do think, and this is something Michael Brendan Dougherty brought up in my podcast yesterday. Check it out, the Matt Lewis Show, Matt Lewis in the News. Subscribe on iTunes. that this is literally something that's deeply ingrained in Orthodox Christianity. Like, this isn't an aside, or I mean, this is a fairly mainstream view of Orthodox Christianity, that homosexuality is a sin. And to force people who are I mean, like, just if someone, again, I would go back to your sort of analogy about the Mormon guy who doesn't want to be around liquor, or a wedding that has liquor. I mean, let's use this example. A photographer, I mean, I think a photographer should have the right to say, "Hey, man, you guys have been living in sin. You've been living together before marriage. You've had premarital sex. It's not my bag. I mean, I'll take birthday pictures of you, but going to your wedding and being a part of that." Now, look, I think that would be silly, and like, I wouldn't choose to operate my photography business that way. But if they want to turn away my business, then more power to them. I'll find somebody else. It's not like the old Jim Crow days where there was state-enforced segregation. Sitting at the lunch counter, there's like nowhere else for you to go. And I know that's the sort of unspoken elephant in the room here, that everybody wants to try to make the analogy, which I think is, of course, a ridiculous analogy to make.
I mean, there's obviously a fundamental view about what should a for-profit business be obligated to do. When it came to the Civil Rights Act days of the '60s, we said you need to serve blacks at the lunch counter. You don't get to pick and choose who you serve by the color of their skin,
Right.
and you can't hire people based on what religion they are. I mean, there are certain lines that we have drawn. It seems like it's one thing to say that, my religious text says homosexuality is a sin, but it doesn't say what that means as far as your day-to-day business practices go. It doesn't lay out a whole regimen of how you implement that philosophy in your day-to-day life. It just says you shouldn't do it yourself.
Yeah, well, I don't think you
So.
should be allowed to turn away or not. If you're a business, I don't think you should be allowed to not serve gays. But if it's a wedding, a religious, wedding ceremony that you feel deeply that being a part of is wrong and would sort of compromise your deeply held values. And by the way, I think that, like, even though I've said and I believe that Orthodox Christianity, that believing homosexuality is a sin is a pretty mainstream part of Orthodox Christianity, I think the number of people who would actually feel that, like, being a part of a gay marriage, I think that's a really small number. I would just say, like, if someone really deep down feels that it would, like, violate their conscience and just be, that it would compromise who they are and their values to do that, then just let them not do it. Why should the state force them to be a part of something and that's, to me, that's a pretty moderate. I think it's a Michael Bruggen. This is all about how great Michael Brendan Dougherty is. I mean, he wrote a piece saying that, like, that is a liberal value, that, like, religious liberty, religious dissent used to be a liberal value. I think I'm actually making a liberal case in many ways.
Well, obviously, I think liberals would, by and large, say we don't want to go back to a situation where a class of people are it's societally permissible to treat them as second class and deny them basic services.
Do you, but I maybe I'm missing it. I don't see any world where, maybe it's because I live in in Washington, D.C. too, but I don't see a big problem of people, like, not liking gays or discriminating against gays or that they're this downtrodden group of people. Maybe in small town America it's different, but I don't see it.
Well, I mean, why would there be this you know remaining push to get these on the books if not this cry from some faction of society? I really don't want to have to interact with these people at all, and don't make me.
I don't think there's ever been a single. I mean, I could be wrong about this, but I don't think there's been an example where RFRA has ever allowed anybody to discriminate against. I think it's basically like if you're a Muslim in prison and you want to keep your beard, you get to keep it. Like that's why I think this law, in a way, is an interesting thing to be fighting over, because I don't think it protects the guy who doesn't want to bake the cake or doesn't want to be the photographer. But look, I'll be honest with you, I think this is a political agenda, and it does feel like we've gotten the low-hanging fruit, and now it's a zero-sum game. And I think it feels more like revenge, like paybacks or hell. Like we've been downtrodden in the past. Now you folks get to feel what it's like to be, you know, to not be able to be who you want to be, to not be able to say what you want to say. At least that's the perception I think a lot of Christians have now, that this is a political agenda. It's not prefaced on any real need or, you know, like that people are really being, I mean, come, do you think how many people really are having a problem getting a photographer for their wedding or getting a cake baked or whatever? I mean, is that really a real problem? I think that's a phony problem. I think this is a political, move that's about, you know, setting precedent and potentially even punishing your and vanquishing your adversaries.
I'm going to let you have the last word, and I'm actually going to unfortunately cut us short because I got a little bit of a minor family emergency to deal with. So I apologize to rush off. This was not the plan. Maybe we can pick it up.
This isn't the last DMZ we ever do, is it?
No, it's not. I have not jettisoned you out of polite society yet. I've talked to my friends.
Okay, yeah.
And you're still okay.
Thank you.
All right.
All right, buddy. Well, good talking to you. And all right, thanks.
Bye.